It is now 2 a.m. on Saturday morning. When I left this tape, I was going to dinner. At dinner, I met Roger Simon and Carl Schwartz of the Daily Illini. Carl told me a little bit about the magistrate who is going to be prosecuting a number of the, I shouldn't say magistrate, assistant district attorney or something of that sort, who's going to be prosecuting a number of these cases in a month or so. And he pointed out this fellow has a very good conviction record, conviction rate, and that he will be interested naturally in keeping it up. He also said that the man's remark was he wished it had been criminal trespass. Apparently the mob action charge was a compromise between criminal trespass, for which he was arguing, and probably something else for which the university was arguing, and it is surmised that that was something like disorderly conduct. After we left the union, we went to the Daily Illini, and I was talking a little bit about the Chicago Tribune, and I asked Carl if he would come back here with me. I'm in the Center for Advanced Study, to sit down and go over newspaper accounts that had come out. And also, we got to pointing out that the PIO office had been playing a rather poor role in the whole thing. We were going to talk a little bit about it. I'll read into the record at this point that Bernal Heinecke, who was the only guy who covered this story reasonably well, came here because he was called by Mel Reif, and it does get you thinking a little bit about what the PIO is doing over there. Also, we have the incident this afternoon where I call up Evans and find that he's writing the story okay, but that no one has ever pointed out to him that maybe the kids got out between the time that the cops were, well, between the time that the action happened and the time the cops were called, and that it would therefore be important in the final record to get that in there, because it just might be that we don't have left among the kids that we have arraigned any of them who are actually responsible for the serious damage and for the attacks on human beings. When we got to instead of coming directly back here, we went to my house, and there we ran into Mel Reif and Bruce and Mike Brady and at different times. We watched the television program tonight that NBC did on the cities, and after that we sat down in the living room briefly before we were to come back over here. We were still worried mostly about newspapers. This was the topic of conversation. It was Mel's idea, suddenly, that what we really ought to do is go up there and pick at the Chicago Tribune. This seemed to strike us all as a rather good idea, and we started talking about how we would arrange to do that, who should be involved in the group that was to go to Chicago, if anyone was to do this, and basically convinced ourselves that, yes, it was a good idea and that we would pursue it and start working on logistics. We felt we should back ourselves up with a petition from the students at the University of Illinois saying that the Chicago Tribune had covered the matter miserably and that we protested it, and we felt that that was a statement to which all students, that is, of all persuasions, could subscribe, and that it should be done. It also, I felt, offered us an opportunity to call, again, attention to the details and to get a chance to get out the very important fact, which is still on my mind, obviously, from this afternoon, that there was lots of time for the kids to leave and that the damage was done by a few. Okay, we came to the Center for Advanced Study shortly after 11, and we're going to start this planning. David and Mrs. Pines came in. We had some discussion about what we should be doing at this point. They were not so happy about the picketing, I think, at first. I think maybe they came around to see that it was not totally implausible. They made the suggestion that we see the gentleman who runs the News Gazette in this town and another fellow who is a football player, basketball player, and is very active in the community, in the Model Cities activity in this town. They felt, and we sort of agreed, that what we needed at this point were activities in which large numbers of students could be involved in some very positive way, and we looked at the range of things that we could do. Demonstration is obviously one of them, fundraising is another. After Dr. and Mrs. Pines left, Teddy and Mel and I and Mr. Brady were here, and we had a discussion of what kinds of things we ought to begin working on. And among them, we finally got off little things on individual people and back to strategy. And Mel pointed out that as early as Tuesday night, he had suggested to Alpert on the phone that what really was happening was that Addison and Peltison were painting themselves into corners and that they simply had to get out of those corners if any hope was to be had. We then drew on the board a room with corners. Now, We then, I think the next very, very useful thing was that Mel floated a pipe dream, as he called it, and this pipe dream consisted basically of this, that at Monday's AAUP, the Chancellor and Addison stand up and issue a joint statement. In other words, that they can be found at least in agreement on something on Monday. That's the first part of it. The second is the details, and the thing that they would be in agreement on is that the charges in the majority of the cases would be dropped, or the students certainly would be dealt with extremely leniently. Mel sees the charges as being the major thing separating Addison and Peldison at the moment. Of course, he's also concerned about the money. This now, of course, obviously involves none of the... We're looking directly at the actors. We're not looking at the circles around them and the pressures upon them. The real bug here is that the North End may turn out to be responsible for this damage, and that may mean that just as the Chancellor is obviously sticking his neck way out to suggest that the charges should be dropped in the majority of cases, Addison is going to have to stick his neck out, perhaps, and be willing to back a hard line against the people who actually did the damage and did the physical violence to people, even if it should turn out, as it may well do, that it's the North End people who are responsible for this. So Addison may have to face the reaction in the black community, just as Peldison is going to have to face the reaction in the white community throughout the state on the law and order issue. This is basically where we have ended up, except that we've thought about how we might go about doing something for these situations. And William K. Williams would appear to be the man to consult next, since he, I know, was being consulted by Addison Wednesday afternoon at 5 o'clock, and therefore, this is Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock. I'm not sure of that. One of those 2 days. That's funny. Anyway, one of those Tuesdays, he was running off to see Willie Williams and try to get some inside dope on what was about to happen. Now, Williams, therefore, will know how close the two men are at the moment. And there's some hope that we can act, that at least we can convey our pipe dream to Williams for passing on to the two actors. Now, the one further details, we felt that the whole thing would be much easier. Anyway, I feel very strongly that it is both plausible and that it will go over better with both the white and the black community if Peldison and Addison can stand there on the stage Monday with their hands on documents, sworn statements, which say that, in fact, it was only a handful. Of course, to continue the pipe dream, it would be even more wonderful if they could name the individuals who are responsible for the damage. This is obviously a very, very extreme thing to hope for, because it would amount to a public accusation of guilt on the part of a certain number of people. Well, I don't know. I mean, I suppose they could say these people did it, the way you always say something when you accuse somebody of a crime, and it will remain for the court to find out whether your accusation will stand up. But anyway, it would obviously be a lot more than we could hope for at the moment. The rest of the things which I may not have put onto this tape earlier are that I talked to Cam Satterthwaite at some length this afternoon, and he has a student whose name he's given me. I believe it's Darnell, who has been in Upward Bound for the last 3 summers. Says there has always been tension between black students from Upward Bound and so on and the black kids in the community, that in fact it was the black kids in the community who caused the trouble the other night. He also further said that the black kids in the community who caused the trouble got out, and it is because of that story basically that I've been pursuing the course I have today, which is to at least make sure that the university issues all true statements which show that this is at least possible, and therefore prepare itself for that explanation if it should come out that among the people arrested, none of them in fact did do any of these things, any of the violence. Now let me see, I'll have to stop and find out. All right, I'm back. There is a little problem with this business of the university issuing all true statements which indicate these things. I'm told that Bob McNabb, who was agreeable to being interviewed last night, that is to say, Thursday night, when I was simply too tired to do it, Bob has clammed up. He didn't say anything to me tonight. He said he was too busy to talk to me, and it looked as if that was at least possible. He also looked a little bit chastened, and it's possible that someone has gotten to him and kicked him. We also have a... I checked with him rather... I really cross-examined him the other day about how many people he had seen doing the damage, and he was pretty firm that he had seen most of the action and that it was very few people. But apparently he has begun to qualify this for whatever reasons, and is saying that what he really saw was when the first furniture was broken, he saw four people come out of that room right after the furniture was broken, but that there were other people in the room. Now, I don't know what this means. This I'm repeating about third hand. What it may mean is that he had good reason to think that because of the way those four people came out of the room, they'd done the damage. I don't know. Like, you know, I suppose if they were holding pieces of the chair, that would be some kind of evidence. But we must get Bob's story in some detail. I'm just afraid that everyone has reacted to our printing of his name on Tuesday morning as saying something to this effect, and that he has been silenced, or he's been so scared that his story now is becoming very questionable in his mind. It is really very late to interview him, and I'm sorry that I didn't get to it earlier. But he said, see John Corker, and I will certainly do that. Then I think it has high priority for tomorrow. Okay, among the other things that we are to do tomorrow is certainly talk to Cam Satterthwaite, who, since he is appearing on the program Monday with Addison and Peltison, is going to be sort of important. I'm also going to call Parkinson of the Assembly Hall to see if it is possible to get the Assembly Hall to turn over its cut of the profits from any benefit we could get Sammy Davis to do, and then I'll talk to Norm Early and see if, in fact, there's anything in that story and get going on that. We also thought tonight that it might be useful to chat with John Lee Johnson about maybe it's time to get the people in the North End who are causing a lot of the trouble between the North End and the community. I mean, we can tell John that we understand perfectly well that, you know, it's white racism that causes people up his way to be the way they are, but that he also has to realize that people who routinely beat up people and break stuff are essentially beyond hope, and that we got to kind of write them off, and that we simply cannot protect them any longer. If it turns out that the same people who usually rough up kids in this community are the ones who roughed them up the other night, then it's maybe time for John Lee to face the facts, to face up to what has to be done if the black community ever is to have a chance in this town and to have justice done with those people. They simply are dangerous, both to themselves, to the whites, to their black community, through backlash, to be roaming the streets. It's going to be very hard giving this message to John, but I think we're going to have to try some, or anyway, we've got to think about trying. Okay. I believe that that reasonably covers our thought tonight. I'm leaving out, of course, lots of the rhetoric. It's fascinating, the flights we're going on. Some of them, I think, are extremely useful. Mel is in the habit, I think, of saying that he knows sort of how it's all going to turn out, and that all of these things are pipe dreams, and he doesn't even allow himself, basically, to think. He knows what he wants. He has a very hard time, apparently, separating the beautiful from what actually is going to happen and work on the possible. I think I'd put it that way. Now, that's mean to summarize some other guy in three lines like that, because it's a lot more than that. I am definitely on an ego trip. I think I finally summarized things well for myself, which is that we simply can't be theoreticians and say what we think is going to happen and build theories. I am remaining open. I don't know what's going to happen on Monday. I will not allow myself to admit that the situation is not fluid and that I am not an actor. If, in fact, I am not an actor, or if that were to be my assumption, I would go home and go to sleep. The only justification for staying on the case is the hope of altering it. I find, therefore, not just an intellectual who cares about ideas and wants to look at the situation, but I insist upon being involved in it. It would not be enough for me to be the historian of this thing. I have to be actively involved. If I were the historian, I would have gone home. The other thing that happened tonight is that Diana Henry Moore called and dictated to me the story that she's turning into some rag or other that she writes for, and she has me quoted in a number of places rather inaccurately. I tried to correct them over the phone with her, but I don't know if I succeeded. I think the story that she finally came out with is moderately well balanced, although I wish I'd had more time with her. I think that about covers it. Maybe I should read in here a little bit about how I'm feeling about Bruce, because this may change and it'll be interesting for me later to know about that. I think he certainly was on an ego trip the other night with thinking that he was going to be able to save the whole situation, that if only his advice had been followed, none of the damage and destruction and so on would have occurred. Then he certainly was out for the Chancellor's neck on Tuesday morning. I think that he's had a very hard time disengaging himself, that his previous defeats with so many little things and some big ones around this campus have colored him in this particular situation. He's totally forgotten that other people also take ideas to the chancellor, that he doesn't act on theirs either, that in fact he does act on a large number and has taken us a long way. In other words, what I'm saying is that Bruce is unable to realize that the things he puts top priority on go into a rather bigger priority pot when they hit the chancellor, and that it's too bad maybe, but it's perfectly understandable that he doesn't win out on them. I think this has colored his action, and he's had a very hard time seeing the consequences of the line he's been taking with the chancellor, particularly with respect to such things as the story. I also have had pointed out to me by Mike Brady, which is a good point, that really the facts, for example, about what happened the other night and the facts about the football game are not really so very important, that in the long run what will happen, I guess basically will happen. That people aren't going to think about the particular individual little things. I countered with, yes, it is true that the facts in detail not matter, but whether they exist or not does matter. And this refers more to what will happen Monday if the Chancellor and Addison were to stand up in front of the group and make some kind of a joint statement about the evidence indicates that the kids really probably weren't guilty of anything except a misunderstanding about whether or not they could leave the union, and that violence and damage were done by very few. I claim that if they can have their hand on a series of signed statements when they make that statement, that indeed no one will ever look at those statements. But the fact that they could will give plausibility to the conclusion which is based upon those sheets of paper, or which is allegedly based upon them. So this is our perception of the situation. I do think that it is right. The individual facts don't matter in any abstract sense, but that the attitudes people have, that their perceptions of the actors and of the situation are extremely important. I think that the white community in Illinois has a distorted perception of what happened here the other night, in that, in fact, individual little facts, which they will forget as soon as they're said to them, will change, however, the gestalt which they have of the whole thing. They won't remember why or at what point their thoughts about the university either hardened or changed or whatever will happen to them, but I think that the little facts do contribute ultimately to your impression. In fact, I think if you think about it, that's all you ever have about anybody is a lot of isolated little facts, most of which you could never call up if anyone asked you for them, but you do have an overall impression of people. One other important thing, I talked to John Christie in Chicago today, and the story he read back, I simply said to him, John, what happened at the University of Illinois? What do you think happened, according to what you've been able to piece together, and what do you think about it? And his answer was that some students came up here, that there was the usual beginning of the year confusion and overcrowding, that some of the kids in the program got shoved into the kind of housing you use when you're overcrowded, that they protested, that the protest got out of hand, there was some damage apparently done by very few. He felt that the administration had taken a very apologetic tone, admitting that it had made administrative mistakes, and that ultimately that was how it looked to him. Now, I have that somewhere in paper, and if I've said this in here wrong in any way, I'll correct it later. This means, I then asked him what he reads in the way of information. Where did he get his information? His answer was he read the New York Times and the Chicago Sun-Times. He had not seen the Tribune article. I then asked him about the business of sitting in at there or of demonstrating at the Tribune. He said he was certainly very upset about the Tribune's coverage of the convention, but that he didn't know that he would get involved in a demonstration. He didn't know whether that really would be effective. He didn't feel like the demonstration type. And now I'm going to drop John because that's about all he's worth, and I'll go to Dave, begins with a Z, in the physics department, who I met on the street. Isn't that awful? Can't think of the name, but you know what I mean. I mean, you being me. Anyway, this guy I met on the street, and I said basically the same thing to him. Well, what do you think happened here this week? And he sketched it to me, and I then said, did you see the Tribune's account of it? And he said, yes, he had. Someone had pointed it out to him. I said, what did you think about it? And he said that he certainly thought it was poor. And then I said, I believe this is the right steps in this escalation, that what would he do if some students demonstrated up at the Tribune, and he said he felt that he would applaud that. In fact, he thought it was a great idea, and I said, would he join? And he laughed and said, you really sucked me in, didn't you? And I think the outcome was that he felt that he might if he were persuaded a little more. And basically, I left him there saying I had no time to persuade him. He had to make his own decision as to when to stand up and be counted. But I thought that the trouble with people was that they sat in armchairs and applauded instead of being out there and doing things. About the same time, Sam Fain came along, and I made similar arguments to Sam. It turned out that Sam is the one who gave... still have that block, the Chicago Tribune, and that, isn't that awful? Got the name on the tip of my tongue. Oh. Well, anyway, oh, jeez, it's hard. Because Zally, Dan Zally, not Dave at all. Okay, Zally, Zally hadn't seen it, and Fain had given him the article. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I was just working for the name. Sam's reaction was to write a long letter to the Daily Illini about how wretchedly the whole thing was being covered, and apparently he...